Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is David K. Johnston, a columnist for Reuters and the president of Investigative Reporters and Editors, an educational organization with 4,200 members. He's a 13-year veteran of the New York Times. He won the Pulitzer Prize in 2001 for enterprise reporting that uncovered loopholes and inequities in the U.S. tax code. And he's uncovered so many tax dodges that he's been called the de facto chief tax enforcement officer of the United States. He wrote the best-selling books Perfectly Legal and Free Lunch, and his latest, The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind, will be published in September. Welcome to Background Briefing, David K. Johnston.
Well, Ian, thank you for having me on again.
Well, thanks for joining us, David, and just to change the subject from Aurora to what people were talking about before this incident, and Mitt Romney in his tax situation, the extent to which he's apparently playing pretty hardball in not wanting to release his tax forms, and joining this debate or throwing fuel on the fire, if you will, is a new report by the Tax Justice Network, written by James Henry, a former chief economist with a consultancy firm McKinsey, that now has revealed that the super rich have hidden at least $21 trillion in tax havens, a figure equivalent to the size of the U.S. and Japanese economies combined. Does that strike you as extraordinary?
Well, it's the best estimate anybody has been able to produce yet. James Henry, who is extraordinarily skilled at looking at the fine print to figure these sorts of things out, went through various disclosure statements of the big private banks. And this figure he's got, $21 trillion, is roughly 10% of the value of the net worth of the planet. That is, the best latest estimates of the planet's net worth is around $210 to $250 trillion. So I think it's entirely credible that, yes, we could have 10% of the world wealth in these places. And he also estimates that about 92,000 people have almost $10 trillion, that's their personal money. This isn't corporate money, it's their personal money. That's an average of a little over $100 million each.
Well, he also says that the $21 trillion figure may actually be a conservative figure, and the true scale could be as high as $32
trillion. Yes, he does, which would bring it up to about 15%. But, you know, $21 trillion is big enough to make the point that there is this enormous amount of secretive money, the gains on which are either being tax-deferred or not taxed at all. If you assume that the people holding, the 92,000 people holding private accounts are just making 5% of their money, and I'm being cautious there, 5% is what you ought to be able to earn if you're sophisticated over time without much difficulty, then you're talking about $5 million a year to each of those people, probably going untaxed and compounding. And, of course, this is one of the reasons that I've said that I believe that the Cayman Islands, as currently operated, are a threat to the national security of the United States, because the revenue that is lost through these devices to the United States government and to other modern countries, Europe, Japan, Canada, is very, very damaging to them.
Well, the data that that Mr. Henry used comes from the Bank of International Settlements, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and from national governments. It seems, though, as bad as it is for the United States to have all of this money, one, sitting idle and not doing anything, and two, avoiding taxation, it seems that, though, the worst hit are the 139 developing countries, where since the 1970s, the richest citizens of these 139 developing countries have amassed $7.3 trillion to $9.3 trillion of unrecorded offshore wealth. And this is a...
Right. Well, in many cases, those are countries that are essentially run by kleptocrats who are looting the public good, you know, and looting the public bank in order to do this and causing terrible damage. There's one problem. I talked to James Henry today about this to make sure. There is one problem with this data, and that's something called round tripping. We don't know how much of this money is really circular in its flow. For example, if you look at the direct foreign investment in India, the Indian government has concluded that it's not a real number, and that a good deal of that money, possibly as much as half, is money that leaves India, is sent to places like Mauritius, the sugar islands off the east coast of Africa, and then reinvested in India. This appears to be going on in China at a tremendous rate of people removing money and putting it back. The growth of that has stopped for the moment because of the world economy. But this general trend is there. So the picture is a little complex, Ian, but nonetheless, it should be a major public policy concern that 10% or more of the world's wealth is being held in countries whose basic business is helping people evade taxes.
And this is described by Mr. Henry as a huge black hole in the world economy. It seems like a pretty apt description.
It retards overall growth for everybody. And, of course, the world is full of stories of people who get into these deals with the private bankers. If they have done anything improper, the bankers are now in control of them. You've put your money with these private bankers, and you want to take it out. And they go, well, no, you can't do that. And if you do, they imply that they will tell the tax authorities in your home country about this. And you might be earning higher returns, making the economy better, if you had left the money in your country in the first place. And the world is full of examples of wealthy people who, in order to avoid a dollar of tax, lost $20 of the value of their wealth, which is part of why it's important that we get to the insanity of this notion that the thing that drives business is avoiding taxes. It's not. It's making profits and maximizing wealth.
Again, I'm speaking with David K. Johnston, the columnist with Reuters and the president of the Investigative Reporters and Editors, an educational organization with 4,200 members. He's a 13-year veteran of the New York Times, where he won the Pulitzer in 2001. And he's been so successful in uncovering tax dodges, he's been called the de facto chief tax enforcement officer of the United States. He's also written the bestsellers Perfectly Legal and Free Lunch, and his latest book, coming out soon, is The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. At the end of 2010, the 50 leading private banks alone collectively managed more than $12.1 trillion in cross-border investment assets for private clients. And the three private banks handling the most assets offshore are UBS, Credit Suisse, and Goldman Sachs. And there are less than 100,000 people, you mentioned 90,000 people worldwide, who own about $9.8 trillion of the wealth held offshore. This, of course, is coming into focus a little thanks to Mitt Romney. Do you think this story with Mitt Romney, now that's off the headlines because of the latest massacre, is it going to come back, do you think, David K. Johnston?
Oh, yeah. I think that the Obama administration, or Obama campaign, I'm sorry, not the administration, the Obama campaign, they're going to torture Romney with this all the way up to the election. Romney has been very clear that he will not release more returns. I've talked to the campaign. They're quite insistent about this. And so in line with that, there's an ad that the Obama campaign put out that I think is very, very pregnant with meaning. It pokes at Romney for his offshore accounts and his very low tax rate, and then says, why won't you release your returns? Could it be you didn't pay taxes in some years? Now, remember, Romney gave 23 years of returns to the McCain campaign 4 years ago when they were considering him for vice president, and he was passed over for that very deep thinker and well-known leader, Sarah Palin. Which makes one wonder, was there something in those returns that was troubling beyond the fact that it would just be two rich white guys running for president? Secondly, the Romney people, when asked if he's paid taxes, have said yes. The problem is journalists didn't ask the right question. The question is, did you pay federal income taxes every year, and did you pay a relatively nominal amount in any year, say less than 5% of your income? This ad that says, didn't you pay any, I don't believe, based on what we've seen of Obama, who is a cautious but decisive man, that they would have run that ad unless they know somehow that he's got a year where he paid no or virtually no taxes. And I point to the example of how the Obama administration killed Osama bin Laden. He demanded that they very carefully plan this. It wasn't like the Jimmy Carter 1979 disaster in the desert over the hostages in Iran. But when the time came to make the decision, he did it. And I just can't imagine that Obama, who personally had to approve that ad, would have had that phrase in there unless they know he's not going to release his returns, because doing so would be more damaging than not releasing the returns.
And the fact that he gave 21 years to John McCain when he was hoping to be the VP indicates that they exist. I mean,
there are other reasons that things like this get out there. All rich people, Ian, are involved in various kinds of litigation, disclosure statements, all sorts of things could have happened. You know, 22 years ago, I guess, I broke the story that Donald Trump, who was claiming to be a multibillionaire, actually had a negative net worth because somebody gave me his net worth statement prepared by his bankers.
Well,
it was a low-level person who, you know, leaked it out to me. And so, shouldn't be the least bit surprising if the campaign has gotten a hold of either the actual returns or the what are called the abstracts of them.
So it's just as well that Donald Trump has a day job being a vulgarian on television, right?
Yes. Well, of course, earlier this year, all sorts of journalists, you know, including my former employer, the New York Times, and my former employer, the LA Times, were treating him seriously as a candidate for president of the United States. And, in fact, all he was doing was running for a better contract on television. After all, realize that he had to say, I'm sorry, I just can't serve as president because I've got something more important to do. I've got to have my TV show, The Apprentice. Yeah, right.
Well, David K. Johnson, there are things that are going on in this country, particularly in how it impacts the democracy and how facile and almost futile the national debate is. For example, if you're a registered eligible voter who votes Democrat, you have to jump through hoops and you have to prove who you are. But if you're a billionaire who's buying the election for the Republicans, you don't have to reveal who you are. And if you're president of the United States, running for president of the United States and basically saying you'll run America like a good manager and you'll be the CEO of USA Incorporated. And if you're in charge of USA Incorporated and you're Mitt Romney, if you're a businessman, then you got to look at the revenue side. Where do you get your revenues from to run USA Incorporated? Well, the revenues come from taxes, for God's sake. And, you know, you're saying that you're not required to let the American people know what your policy and preferences and practices are vis-a-vis taxes. This is
we do know, Ian, his broad outline. Basically, Romney believes that wealthy people should pay some taxes, but they should pay much lower taxes than they do now. I mean, that's what we fundamentally know. And there's a lie that has enabled him to get away with this. Today, somebody posted about me, you know, the same lie that you see everywhere. Everybody I've ever talked to who relies heavily on Fox News believe this. That is this idea that after the taxes were cut in 2001 and 2003 under President Bush, that revenues rose. They didn't. They didn't. They never got back to the level of 2000 and 2001. And 2001 was a recession year, the year the Bush tax cuts the first tax cuts took effect. That since then, in both real terms and especially in per capita terms, revenue has fallen. The individual income tax now brings in round numbers, one-third less per American than it did in 2001. How are you supposed to run a country with the growing complexity in the world, with as a result of the way that the U.S. responded to 9/11, the increased military spending, with one-third less revenue from your largest single revenue source? That's crazy.
Well, he's also going to cut taxes in the Ryan plan, which he endorses.
Yes, and let me just – one part of the Ryan plan. Let me just take one part. You know, Paul Ryan, who is treated as if he actually is a serious person in Washington because most journalists just know how to report what's said. They accurately report what people tell them, but they don't really understand the underlying meaning. He has a plan to turn Medicare into a plan that would have a defined defined contribution to it, not a defined benefit. And he says that if we do that over the next 75 years, it will save so much money that your taxes will go down by the equivalent of $5.7 trillion today. Now, that's a lot of money. That's the entire output of the American economy from New Year's Day well into May. Here's what he doesn't tell you. His plan would raise private spending by $40 trillion. So you'd save $1 in taxes and spend $8 out of pocket, unless you're poor, and then you just die. What kind of bargain is it for you to save you a dollar in taxes and spend $8 more somewhere else? I mean, that isn't voodoo economics. That's insane economics. And yet, as best I can tell, I'm the only journalist who's pointed this out in the whole country. This should have been big news. And by the way, the numbers I'm giving you, the $40 trillion, they come from using the exact same technique that was used by Ryan's staff to come up with their figure and just applying it to private spending.
So
it's the exact same technique. There's no complexity or anything else. It's just, okay, you did it this way. Now let's do it to the other side of the equation, private health care spending. 8-1. You'll end up with a $7 net loss, and he's treated in Washington as a serious person?
Well, just in the last minute here, David K. Johnson, apparently the polls are pretty even. So I'm just not wondering. I'm wondering why the average American taxpayer is not outraged at how they're shouldering the burden, and people like Mitt Romney aren't.
Because with America, we don't raise people to be critical thinkers. We know from a study done by Fairley Dickinson that people who get their news primarily from Fox are less well-informed than people who say they have no regular news source. You know, they hear things on the radio and they walk by or whatever. Those people are better informed. We have a nation of people who are innumerates. You know, just like there's illiteracy, there's innumeracy, people
right.
who don't really understand numbers.
Right.
And it is a major problem. And it isn't just a problem with policy. It's a problem that's making us poorer relative to the rest of the world.
Well, David, I thank you so much for joining us here today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with David K. Johnson, a columnist with Reuters and president of the Investigative Reporters and Editors, and he's a 13-year veteran of the New York Times, won the Pulitzer in 2001, and is the author of Free Lunch and Perfectly Legal, and his latest coming out soon is The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared.